Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast, shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome along to Well Well Well. We're here all keeping well in the Wairarapa, where Well 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 represents the first well is for looking after our own well-being. Two wells are like two people together. We're helping to look after each other, and all three wells reflects that community perspective where we're helping each other in the community to maintain their wellness. So I've got two special guests here today, really honoured to have them here today. So Rob and Anaru, awesome, welcome along. Where am I, hide am I?
Kia ora.
Okay, so they are from the Ahu Collective, and we're going to hear a bit about what they do and some of their background in terms of their name, Well Well Well. I know they've had a bit of their own personal journey. They do a lot of work together and with others, and then the Ahu Collective has become quite a significant community organisation. So, welcome aboard. Rob, can I ask you to open us up with a karakia?
Of course. Anei te karakia timatanga, tēnei au, tēnei au, te hāpai nei, te tiri nei, te paupau nei, i tōku reo, ma tōku mana, ma tōku hi, te māpihi mauria, kia mau, kia ita, haumie, huie,
tākie. Kia ora, thank you. So normally start off with a bit of a saying. This is what you think of this one, see if I can get it right. Ma te whakarongo, ka mōhio. Ma te mōhio ka marama, ma te marama ka mātou, ma te mātou ka ora. So I think I believe I'm saying through listening comes knowledge, through knowledge comes understanding, through understanding comes wisdom, through wisdom comes well-being.
Nice.
And I'm hoping today that through a bit of listening to some of your guys' kōrero, that I become more knowledgeable, get a bit more understanding, and hopefully wiser down the line. And if that helps my well-being, I'm happy. If it helps everybody out there in radio land, that would also be awesome. So who would like to go first and talk a wee bit about yourself, your background, maybe about, you know, where you brought up, your schooling, what was your favourite subject?
Okay, yeah, I'll go first, Mike.
Awesome.
So first of all, I just want to give a mihi to you and Arrow FM for having us here today. The pleasure is all ours. So my name is Robert Brown. I whakapapa to Ngāti Hakapatu Hiohio, which is up in Waiohau, and also to the East Coast, Te Aitanga Mahaki. Yeah, so a little bit about my journey. I was, you know, brought up in intergenerational trauma, you know, the likes of alcohol and drug abuse and, you know, a bit of physical abuse and that sort of stuff, but it was quite prevalent, you know, in the 80s. Yeah, full circle. I spent about 30 years in the system, and yeah, probably the last few years I bumped into the Skopapa Ahu Collective through my brother. Yeah, and ever since then I've really found my worth, I feel, yeah, within the community. I didn't have much confidence within myself, you know, living the life that I'd led, but being in this kaupapa, I really have found my niche, I guess, and yeah, I know I have a, how can I explain it, I'm good at helping people, yeah, so yeah, it's a little bit about me, I guess.
Awesome, thank you for your openness and your willingness to share. Cool. And sometimes it is that adversity we've had in life that actually becomes that turning point and creates a better self, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Awesome.
Definitely.
Anaru, what would you like to share about your...
Mauri ora ki te whare, tēnei te mihi ki a koe e hoa, e mihi ana tō pōhiri me mātou kaupapa Ahu Collective, me ki kei te mihi, kei te mihi, e te tuakana, tēnei te mihi tō karaki e tīmata o te kōrero nei. Hoi anō, ko ai au, ko Anaru te rangi whakaiwa tōku ingoa, e noho anau ki konei, Wairarapa, te karu o te ika, e mahi anau ki te ngāhere o Ahu Collective, so my name's Anaru. I live and whakapapa here to the Wairarapa, and I am the director of Ahu Collective. What brings me into this realm is, like my brother, my own journey through intergenerational trauma, and adversity and resolution and hardship. And a lot of the issues that we have endured have been passed through generation after generation, and grateful that a lot of those cycles are ending here with us, and even more grateful to be able to lean on our lived experience to create a platform where we can begin a process to help end cycles for other people here in our community. So grateful to be here and grateful to share space with my tuakana. And just want to apologise, I've just had some teeth removed, so my voice is a little bit funny, but we're here. Nō reira, tēnei te mihi ki a koutou.
Kia ora. Hey, no, absolutely awesome to have you here, and do really appreciate that you guys are so open about a bit about your journey, but more that you are having gone through that journey of change, that you're now here willing to help others, and hopefully today it can be inspiring some other people who may be listening out, or other people who hear, say, hey, you know, jump in, join these guys and find out what they're doing and learn a bit about for their own healing journey. So look forward to finding out more. But we will just whiz off to have a bit of a wee song break here. Ko au tō maunga tū tonu, ko te moana pari mai koe, ko koe te aua I taku remu, ko taua anō taua, no te ole I kura waka, he tiaki e te penua, nei. Aotearoa he iwi kaha tātou, e mana tuku iho mai anō. Whenua haumako, wairua ora, whai a tō ara ki te mutunga. No te pitim no tata, no te whenua o te atua tātou. Aha ko anō ia mai koe, ka papai tonu mātou mō. He kore roto te whenua, he te mai ki a tātou. He toa au mōna e o kenei e, e kore ue hina, he uri no te roi mata, se toto ola tūpuna, e kore ue ue hie. Kia kaha tātou ki tau I pai ei, whakatinana kau ai mutunga, whenua haumako, wairua ora, and welcome back to Well here on 92.7 Arrow FM. Today, privileged to have Anaru and Rob from the Ahu Collective sharing a bit about their own personal journeys, but more importantly about the awesome work that the Ahu Collective get up to. So we're just going to check back in with two gentlemen here and hear a bit more about, say, life as when you were growing up as a kid. What were some of the things? How would you spend your spare time at the weekends after school? What did you get up to? What was your... What were the fun things you enjoyed doing?
Ah, cool. Yeah, so like I said before, Mike, I was brought up in the 80s, so, you know, anyone who knows that sort of time there, there was a lot of physical abuse, you know, smacking was quite common, you know, drug court, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, that was my era. I was born in Lower Hutt, and my first 9 years of life we spent in Petone. So, like, you know, a lot of the influences around Petone for me growing up was, like, seeing gang members, bit of domestic violence. But the thing about that environment for me as a kid was that there were a lot of other kids. So I found myself hanging out with a lot of different age groups, but mostly the older kids. Yeah, and so from an early age, I guess, that environment and gang members and that was sort of what I was introduced to and what I thought was the norm. Yeah, and so, yeah, the sort of things we used to get up to were quite innocent at first, you know, cowboys and Indians, all that sort of stuff, and then progressed to burglary and, all types of little bits of mischief and that.
Mm. So were some of those bits of mischief, were they a bit more like your cowboys and Indian? It was just a game to you and you weren't really aware of the impact it might have had on others?
Yeah. I was just like more or less, you know, when you're young, you're trying to find your group. I guess I was going along with the crowd, as it were, you know. And like I say, that was all I sort of knew, you know. And so I just thought it was normal. Yeah, and I do admit it was a little bit exciting, you know, being mischief. I will admit that, yeah.
But that's pretty typical of any child growing up, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're going to be influenced by the people around and people are going to act in a way in order to fit in.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Anaru.
Kia ora.
What'd you like to get up to when you were back as a young fella?
I think like my childhood from Te Ao Pepe through to Te Ao Tamaiti was a little bit different to my tuakana. He's 10 years my age, so in that time my mum and or our mum and dad were a little bit more aware and mature of some of the older habits. We know we still got a little bit of that. A little bit of that force from our mum, but in hindsight it's about recognising that our parents done the best for the condition that they were raised in and born into, and hence the term intergenerational trauma. And so that's only something that comes forth in hindsight. I know that in the moment, you know, you have a lot of resentment and there's a lot of pody and sadness when you're enduring trauma as a young kid. But I was quite lucky. I had a pretty good upbringing. I think I was quite supported by my mum and dad. I had a promising career in football and soccer at a young age and was being scouted from, you know, many, many coaches from the age of five and upwards. So a lot of my childhood was about being on the soccer field, and that was home for me, and that was, you know, my world. And so you could often find me sleeping with my football or carrying it everywhere I went. I would be juggling it up the street. I would be juggling it through school. It would be stuck to me in some shape or form. So growing up, for me, my life was soccer. But when I got to the age of 19, I'd spent the last 14 years playing high-level soccer. From the age of 13, I was selected for the Wairarapa United men's team here.
Wow.
And so that became almost a career for me from 13. And if you could imagine, as a youngster, you have to automatically go through the rite of passage into adulthood, because the world that you're now sitting in is full of men. And so alcohol and that environment of soccer and the cultural sports was introduced into my life at 13. And I think the biggest challenge for me was ego, you know, being the only 13-year-old in that environment. Everywhere we went, there was no one else of my age. And so I had a level of ego that put me above most other tamariki or tayuhi my age, and it kind of forced me to become an adult unnecessarily, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was a young adult, 19, 20, I actually felt quite confused about where my life was heading and where I wanted to be and where I belonged, because all my childhood there had been a perception of Anuru, the football player. There was never a whakaaro about who really is Anuru. And so I decided to leave a promising career at 19 to go and find out what does it mean to be Anuru. And one of the places that I went to is actually where my tūakana was, and that was in the hood. And I found solace in the hood because of the brotherhood connections and the close relationships that I witnessed from my tūakana and his peers, and the way that, you know, the brotherhood supported each other and the way that they cared for each other. I never had that. You know, all I had was an expectation to become, you know, a great footballer. And so I wanted to feel what it meant to be a young person. And so at 19, I left the footy and I embarked on this journey to find out what it meant to be Anuru. And I made many wrong turns on that journey, and it led me down a dark pathway into crime, gangs, violence, addictions, mental health, and so forth and so forth. But one of the greatest gifts is when it actually led us to prison, and that's where our life changed, I guess. That was at 20, 21. So that's a little bit about the journey and a little bit about that pathway for me.
Awesome, really appreciate that, because it must be quite difficult. And I know there's a number of prodigy sports kids out there who are becoming adults before their time, and it's nearly like as a youngster you got to act as an adult, and when you're in that adult environment there's obviously adult privileges which potentially opens up to things you're not really ready for, and whether that is the things like at the club rooms with the alcohol or the language and those sorts of things. So does make it a challenging journey through there. And I guess also with going through journey at school and things like that, that things are quite set, aren't they? You have a timetable, you go home and you have your sports practices, whatever. And once you leave school, that environment opens right up, and you're all on your own. You're paddling your waka, aren't you?
Definitely.
One of the things we speak about and is embedded in our work is the term rite of passage, right?
Right.
And the rites of passage are key milestones in human development that are supporting and nurturing you as you change from those different age groups. And so they're actually really important to prepare you for what is happening next in your life. But if you don't have the right people and the right environment that welcomes you through that rite, then you're led into the blind darkness without having awareness. And so when I think about being a 13-year-old coming into that world of adulthood, I didn't have the awareness or maturity to actually navigate that properly. And if there was anything that I would change, it would be that I perhaps made it at an older age where I was a bit more mature and could actually deal with some of the challenges. And we look at it at a big spectrum through every landscape where we have rangatahi or young people who are successful in education or employment or sports or whatever. What will fail them in the end is that level of maturity and the right or that passage that has been paved for them. And that's why it's really important that we have pillars around us, because they are the ones that are responsible for welcoming you into those rights. And, you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
How well do you think we do as a community to support our tamariki, etc., rangatahi through that rite of passage?
I think at the highest purpose of what a rite is and its spiritual capacity, we don't do it really well. But we do have great kaupapa and initiatives that are supporting young people. But on the other scale, we have a large demographic of young people who are classified as high complex, non-engaged, hard to reach, who you will never find in school, not even in our eds or in any other environment. And so when we think about who really needs the right or to go through that passage, it's those rangatahi, the unheard, the forgotten, the non-engaged. And so at one end of the spectrum, we do it well for your average rangatahi or young person who's in school and who has a job, but for those that are on the cusp of entering into a gang, even worse suicide, or even, you know, more troubling, not than suicide, but troubling nevertheless, prison or youth prison or the cells, we're not doing a good job at navigating rights for those young people.
It seems to be a lot more about education to get knowledge which may be used or not used later, rather than for you to explore your own personal journey and how to be that best version of yourself. Is that, would that be agreeable?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think like in my life, and I don't know about for my tuakana, but the one thing that I never had was a period where somebody just grounded me and allowed me to find my identity, my place of belonging, who I was, what my purpose was, but more importantly, where did I come from. And I think when we look at rangatahi who are playing, you know, Indians and cops and rob, you know, a lot of that is about finding their place in this world or their whaiwahitanga. And, you know, Matua kind of said it earlier, you know, trying to find where do I fit in, where do I belong. We don't have kaupapa like that for our rangatahi. And so when we look at the demographic of men that we are working with at the moment, a lot of them are still that inner boy who need a place of belonging. And so the rite of passage never ends. It's continuous right through until it's necessary for you.
And even at PO, I mean, are we actually there supporting people through those difficult stages? Possibly not as well as we could, is it? It's we just kind of expect people, you're going to grow and be what you are without support through some of those vital steps.
Bro, there's incredible people out there, right? There are incredible pillars who are doing incredible mahi and nurturing vast amount of people. And so one of the things that we can celebrate more often are those people. And so one of the things that we don't do is actually magnify who we have in our community as PO.
Good point. Okay, so you've gone through this journey. We've got you to sort of early adulthood. What, can I say, what went wrong? What went, it's not wrong, but what were some of the choices you wish you had more wisdom before you made? Is that a better way to reframe the question?
Just like my brother said, you know, having those role models and support, for me, that's, you know, that's how I see it. Went the best. I had love in that, but like I say, the role models might not have been the best, and, you know, just someone to tell me no, like, you know, go this way, like, this is what you do. I never really had that. It was like more of yelling and, you know, you don't do that, or, you know, a bit of a hiding. So yeah, that's
the more of the focus was on what not to do,
yeah,
as opposed,
yeah, definitely,
to
definitely
what to do. And it's we do find that, isn't it? We tend to be punitive and reactive in terms of how we treat people. No, you don't do that, rather than that encouraging and
well, you know,
to find that direction.
It's from that's what I've learnt to do with my kids, is you know, is more encouragement, you know, and building them up, you know, and if they do go a little bit astray, I'm there and I'm being supportive, you know, and telling them to, you know, try again and that sort of stuff. You know, it's more of an empowerment. And
that,
I learned
that manner enhancing.
Yeah.
It's all right to make mistakes too, isn't it? That's where your learning occurs.
Yeah, so that's what that taught me, was that, like, yeah, in hindsight, as I got older, I thought, oh, this is what I'm going to do with my children. I'm going to empower them. And, you know, we only human and we make mistakes, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Cool. Right, we're just going to cut to a bit of a song. It's a bit of an oldie and a classic from Herbs, Sensitive to a Smile. And when we come back, we're going to find a bit more about the genesis of the Ahu Collective.
No room for distrust, no room for hate. open up your heart. Quality in life that's hard to find, like a child with an open mind. Tenderness sets a tear to a smile.
Kia ora, welcome back to Well 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 here at 92.7 Arrow FM. We're here with Robin Aru from the Ahu Collective. We've heard a bit about their journey and we're now going to explore a bit more about establishing and the start of the Ahu Collective. Aru, what can you tell us about where was the inspiration? Did that come from? How did it all start?
Yeah. Ah, cool. So when I share the whakapapa of Ahu Collective, I always begin with its core root, and it is the endurance of intergenerational trauma. And a lot of the processes that we have put in place for Ahu Collective and its direction and purpose is to help address some of those deep traumatic experiences. So when I look at my own life, which we've had a little bit of opportunity to explore, a lot of the core fundamentals of Ahu Collective actually come from my time being within the system. And so myself and my tuakana, we've spent a majority of our life in the system, whether it is justice, imprisonment or addictions, mental health. And a lot of those times, those systemic environments failed us. And there were multiple times where we were repeating our same old story. We weren't receiving the correct help, or we weren't valued or heard. And so when I embarked on my journey post-prison and I had the opportunity to work for some incredible organisations, Rangatahi Tu Rangatira, Te Runanga, Te Hauora Runanga o Wairarapa, EMS, Te Arataiohi, and all of these amazing kaupapa, one of the things that I was really trying to find was an ecosystem that was able to transform some of the deficit models. And it is quite sad and daunting to say that I could never find that environment. And mainly because a lot of our systemic and service providers, their policies and procedures are informed by deficit models. And when we look at the very core of those structures, to me they're a representation of a pine forest.
Can you just clarify what you mean by these deficit models, just for understanding?
Yeah, cool. So an example of a deficit model could i.e. be an assessment model. And a majority of the assessment models we've been through are these tick box assessments that don't bridge what the most important part of their engagement should be, which is relationship. It doesn't allow the individual to have autonomy, to be able to share and express who they are and explore their own journey. So by deficit, what it looks at is the focus point is all that has been negative in your life, rather than exploring what the potential of that individual may look like.
So some of that might actually also be that if you're engaging with services and the services are looking back at your past and trying to look at your traumas rather than looking at what your strengths are and where you're going into the future, is that
If you think about the whole entire system at a whole, and we'll start, let's start at the courts, right? So you're now being sentenced at court and you're obligated to go and sign in at corrections. So you go to corrections. For corrections, what they receive is a folder or a report of your current condition and your current crime or offending. That becomes a picture of who you are as an individual, right? So you walk into corrections, you're now engaged by this piece of paper that determines to the correction officer who you are. But that's not a reflection of who I am.
Correct,
and so
understand.
When we engage and we sit in that space, it's deficit, right? Where when we reflected on those experiences, we were able to say, actually, if we transform the way we held that space, we could make this more mana enhancing for our whānau who come into this kaupapa. So all of those models, for me, are deficit. And so one of my greatest responses that I have ever done was to create Ahu Collective. And for me, Ahu Collective was about creating a ngāhere. And I said before that most services are a copy and paste of a systemic lens. For me, represents the pine forest. When you look at a pine forest, it's a one model, you know. It's a one model make that doesn't nurture intergenerational change. It doesn't nurture relationship, biodiversity, sustainability. And when we move through a majority of our services, that's what the reflection is. And so for us, it was about how do we create a ngāhere. And when you look at some of the characteristics of a ngāhere or a forest, there's symbiotic relationships where every relationship is beneficial for those who are engaging. There's biodiversity where you're celebrating uniqueness and celebrating difference and celebrating collectiveness. There's sustainability where the condition of this environment becomes more transformative for those that come after. And if you can think about our services, not just here, but everywhere, you will not find an environment that does that.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, our whānau are being obligated to be there. That's a conflict instantly, you know, because in the end, they are happy to be there, but it's against their will. And so if it's against their will, it's not enhancing their mana initially. So Ahu Collective was established in 2021 to lead by an example, to create an ecosystem that was informed by the characteristics of the Ngāhere. And so every single policy and procedure, every assessment model, every framework, every intricate level of Ahu Collective is a representation of a mana-enhancing response or a whānau. And so the word ahu means to nurture, and the collective was about bringing together a collective of natural nurturers. And when I think about what does it mean to be a natural nurturer, it's not necessarily your degree in social service, your degree in addictions. It's about your temperament to be able to have empathy and awareness when you're engaging with whānau, when you're holding space for vulnerable people, when you are sitting with the disadvantaged and marginalised, you know, individuals of our community, and you're able to tune in and share kōrero and hold a safe space for them to share the true extent of their trauma and their adversity. And so we're grateful that we have an incredible collective of pau wahine and pau tāne, each who have incredible stories. And one day we will all be privileged to hear some of those stories. Matsuakana has an incredible story, and our other pau have incredible stories that have endured the mental health system, prisons, addictions, mental health, family violence. And when you bring all of those pau in the room, and you ask them about the experience within the system, what I just shared about the deficit lens, they will all mimic and replicate that. And so we've been grateful to have, you know, a lot of incredible pau in the room who each lent on their lived experience, and all of those valued whakaaro and kōrero actually helped catalyse Ahu Collective. So that's how we began.
Awesome.
There's many layers to it, but I know we have an hour, so we'll leave it there.
Awesome, because I've heard the Pine Forest and Ngāhere before, and that instantly resonated, and I can see, well, he's kind of Pākehā in our little silos and not doing a lot of work between, and we look at the Ngāhere, which is a reflection of what naturally happens in this world around us.
I just want to say, like, it's not Pākehā, yeah. It's not Māori, you know, it's one way of thinking, you know,
and another
way of thinking, because we also have whānau Māori who have Pine Forest whakaaro as well. We also have whānau Pākehā, and so it's mindset, you know, it's not race or religion.
Awesome.
You know, you can go anywhere in the world and they will have a connection to a forest or what that means to them. And in our wānanga last year, we had a range of diverse ethnicities in our kaupapa, and they were all able to share an experience in the Ngāhere to a pine forest. So, yeah, just wanted to clarify.
If I use the term indigenous communities, would that be a better term? Then all I'm thinking is those who've been engaged with the land for such a long period of time, that connection is stronger, and that understanding of the importance and the need to look after it, and that is kind of fits me a bit better.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm happy to be corrected. I, like I said at the start, here to gain wisdom. So in that reflection of what happens in nature, is that part of some of those stories are able to relate to the tāne, the wahine, who have experienced that trauma? Or is it more that's the layers of how we support the individual? For my example, it's like I looked at something like the tree and the importance of having the roots to be grounded in order to grow. I need to nurture and put the right things in, those sorts of things, to in order to fruit, etc., you know.
We're very metaphorical.
Yes.
In the way that we deliver kaupapa, and metaphors are beautiful because they allow you to examine a scenario at a real deeper and rich level. And the metaphor of the Ngāhere is a great one, you know. And when we explore Absolutely. What it looks like to have a ngāhere of relationships, because that's what ngāhere broken down means, ngā meaning many, and here meaning connection. So when we look at ngāhere o tāne, it's about having a intricate web of relationships between men. And one of the things that you shared around, like, how does the taiao reflect, you know, the journey of our tangata, the big one that I always sit with is that all that we know from a rākau or tree begins in darkness.
Mm-hmm.
All that we see in the light existed and came forth from the darkness. And so when we look at our whānau who have endured so much trauma, there's potential for them to become beautiful rākau, you know, that grow incredible nutrients that now allow conservation to happen in their own environment, where they're nurturing a better condition for the next kākano. And so metaphorically, in our kaupapa, all of our assessment models are informed by the ngāhere. All of our policies are informed by the ngāhere. So, I guess when we look at it from that deeper level, then, yeah, we are the taiao. And there's a beautiful whakatauki, and it's ko te taiao ku au, ko au ko te taiao. The environment is me, and I am the environment. Yeah.
Awesome. We've got to cut to another song. And we've got Lady Six coming up with Like Water.
One morning I woke up, looked over and kissed your shoulder. It felt so right. You didn't wake up, I could see it in your face. You knew my intention right. Sacrificing gets caught and cut. Oh, I know, I feel it's moving. Let's never lose it. This movement, momentum is building. That union is fluid like water. Clean liquids. We got love just like this. Water, our love is like water. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, 92.7 Arrow FM. I'm so grateful having Rob and Anaru here, and we've learned a bit about their journeys and about the birth of the Ahu Collective. So we actually want to find out a bit more about what the Ahu Collective does on a weekly basis. Cool. So I think you guys have got all the talk, and I think if I can keep the question short, we want to listen to you guys more. So who would like to go first over that?
Oh, yeah, so we have a men's summit every Tuesday from 5:30 to 7:30 at Changeability. So, yeah, any of our tāne that want to come along, more than welcome.
So is that open to anyone?
Anyone.
Anyone?
Oh, tāne, obviously.
Yeah. And so if they wanted to find out more details, what's their way to find out that information?
Cool. At this stage, it's probably easier to head to our Facebook at ahucollective.com. That's where you'll find constant updates on all of our available kaupapa and what is happening in our ecosystem. But the Tāne Summit is one of three kaupapa that we have, and Tāne Summit was actually created in response to a lack of funding. And so last year we were grateful to have received funding to deliver our men's rehabilitation program, Ngahere o Tāne, which I must say was quite viral in its presence. You know, we've had hui across the country with different organisations and regions that want to actually adopt that model. And so it was a huge year for us delivering our pilot. But in December, our Pūtea actually ran out, but we had a big collective of men that still needed support, and so we created the Tāne Summit as a weekly engagement just to continue to catch up with our men who had engaged in our kaupapa, and it just became a safe space for men to be their true authentic self and to normalise expressions of vulnerability and openness and the process of sharing. So that's our Tāne Summit, but Ngahere o Tāne is our full rehabilitation program, and we're just absolutely grateful that we have been funded to deliver our Ngahere o Wahine kaupapa as well. So that's the women's rehabilitation program.
Cool. But you also hold wānanga, and I'm hearing stories of people who've engaged and come back and major change, had major shifts. Tell us a bit more about that.
You know, our wānanga is something that is really hard to put into words. It's a journey that must be felt and experienced, and we were grateful to have around 90 plus men attend our six wānanga last year, and you know, each of those men had, you know, move mountains in that 3-day period that they haven't moved in any other time frame of their life. And we had men who actually had been a part of other social services for 10 plus years who said that the 3 days in our wānanga was more impactful than the entire 10 years at that service. And what I want to put that down to is the intricate way that we deliver our wānanga and the uniqueness of our wānanga. If there's another wānanga that is similar, it would be the Pautama Rites of Passage in Whangaroa, and so wanna mihi to our whānau there, because they've been a huge pillar for us to lean on. But what we spoke about earlier was the rite of passage, and our wānanga is actually informed on the rite of passage. So for the 3 days, our men are embarking on a journey that begins from the womb all the way into adulthood. And so in between that timeline, there are a series of experiences and challenges and adversities that they've endured. And a lot of the time within those particular moments are the birth of trauma, or the passing of intergenerational trauma. And a lot of our men today who are carrying surface-level issues, such as addictions, mental health, recidivist offending, family violence, and so forth, that's a response to what is happening at the depth of their life. And so Ngahiri o Tāne, our wānanga, Ngahiri o Wahine, is about diving to the very depth of your life and pulling out the seed of trauma and allowing them to really explore and unpack what that looks like. And one of the things that we celebrate in our approach to rehabilitation or to our wānanga is the difference between what is absent and what is present. And a majority of our social services, they approach our whānau by what is present in their life. What I spoke about earlier, criminal convictions, addictions, mental health, so forth, so forth. For us, we open up a beautiful and safe space where we actually address what is absent. What is absent is connection, is whakapapa, identity, relationship, connection to te taiao, relationship with self. And in our wānanga, we open up a portal where they actually immerse into that. And it's quite funny when we celebrate and reflect on the success of our wānanga, because we had men who were 20-plus year meth addicts who are now celebrating 14 months methamphetamine-free. Nice. Not once in our kaupapa did we actually explore the impacts of methamphetamine. Not once did we explore the harm of methamphetamine. Our approach was about empowering that individual so that they could make better informed decisions for themselves. And so when we look at the spectrum of our outcomes, they come from such a unique approach. And I think that's why our wānanga was so impactful.
It must be so powerful to be part of that kaupapa for people to feel safe to share those stories, difficult stories which involve their trauma. And when you're talking about things like addiction and like that, it must be nice to know that not actually having to address addiction, it is about themselves and addressing themselves, and they are the best master and most knowledgeable about themselves. Unfortunately, we're at a time where we've actually got to wrap up, and there is so much more wisdom that I could draw out of you guys. I don't know, draw out's a word, because you guys are just laying it on the table. It's just absolutely fantastic. And so I hope people are out there listening there. What is, to finish off, what's one piece best of advice that you could give to people at the moment who might be struggling?
One piece of advice that I would give to our whānau is to reach out for help, and that it's okay to reach out for help. But a big one that really helped me is to be more present with yourself and to not be so hard on yourself. And if there was a message that I would give to my younger self, it was that everything is happening the way it's supposed to happen, whether you can see it or not.
Definitely.
And sometimes you've got to wait a wee bit longer down the line to find out why things have happened that actually make you wiser. Hey, look, it's been absolutely brilliant to have on the show. We'd love to have you on any other time. Appreciate your openness and willingness to share, and hopefully that will inspire other people. And for other people, if you are listening, check out the Ahu Collective on the Facebook page, Ahu Collective, A-H-U. Check it out and certainly make contact if you would like to join in their weekly summits or potentially do one of their wānanga down the line. So thank you very much for tuning in this time. Next time, hopefully, we'll have someone here from the DHB, and we're looking into a bit about suicide prevention and Mental Health Awareness Week. But we're going to wrap up today with Rise Up from 660.
Strife, don't let them tell you how to treat your life. But a sunshine brings the day, and the darkness starts to fade. Won't you stand up, rebel? Won't you show them you know how? Won't you rise up? Won't you rise up? Won't you rise up? Baby, it's a revolution.
up for what is true. Don't be afraid to fight. You gotta stand up for your right. Yeah, I'm calling out to you. Stand up for what is true. Don't be afraid to fight. You gotta stand up for your right.
Just rounding off the session there, thank you to all from Well Well Well, and we will catch you same time next week. Thank you very much. Enjoy your day. Bye.